Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We have lots to talk about with our good friend Tim Grunhard. But first, Timmy, unfortunately, we start your segment on a sad note. I saw your tweet about your former coach and mentor, Howard Mudd, and recognized as one of the greatest offensive line coaches ever. I know you were lucky enough to play for him for a while in Kansas City. So if you don't mind, I'd love to get maybe your thoughts and share a memory or two about Howard Mudd, please.
Yeah, hey, thank you for giving me the opportunity. Howard Mudd was a great mentor to me, along with Mike Webster, when I first got here to Kansas City. I first met Howard when I went to the Combine when I was a senior in college. He was in charge of the group that I was kind of rotating with, so he would rotate each position. That's the way they used to do it. There'd be three or four offensive line coaches that would rotate with the group that they were assigned to, and he was assigned to our group, so we really got to know each other during that three-day process and became fast friends. So when I went through the interview process with the Kansas City Chiefs with Marty Schottenheimer, Carl Peterson, Kurt Schottenheimer, I believe Joe Pendry, but Howard Mudd was the one who was basically asking me the questions and put me on the board, and really did a great job of basically giving me an opportunity to show what I knew about the game of football. So that was the first step. Then after that, he worked me out one time as he came into University of Notre Dame for a workout, and worked me out, and we went out and grabbed a little bit of lunch and talked a little bit, and then I didn't hear from him. And you just don't hear from those coaches or those scouts until the draft comes along. But when I was drafted, the first person I heard from was Carl Peterson, and then of course Marty Schottenheimer. But talked to Howard for a long, long time right after that process. And when I came into Kansas City, sat down with Howard and with Mike, and they basically said, hey, listen, this is your job. We are going to give you the best opportunity to win this job, and we want you to take over. And Mike said the same thing. He wanted me to take over here in Kansas City. And Howard was really, really tough on me, but very, very fair to me. And, you know, even that summer, and this is something I never experienced with a coach before, you know, he was tough on us. He was really, really a grumpy dude. I mean, just grumpy. If anybody knew Howard, he was grumpy, grumpy, grumpy. But he was fair. And so after practice was over, we'd go over to Cracker Neck Golf Course over in Independence and go play nine holes, or we would go and, you know, grab some lunch. I mean, that was the kind of guy he was. And I wasn't used to that. You know, when you're in college or in high school, you don't have a personal relationship with coaches like you do when you're in the NFL. And Howard was really my first friend. And then when my father passed away, about halfway through my rookie year, he became like a father to me for the next 4 or 5 years that he was with us, and really helped me to get through a lot of tough times in my life. But more importantly than all of that, I was very, very blessed with the Kansas City Chiefs to have great offensive line coaches, and each one of them had a kind of a different role in my progression or my development as an offensive lineman. Howard Mudd, by far, maybe with McNally, who was with the Cincinnati Bengals, was the best technician coach of all time. He was the best just showing you how to take good steps, getting in a good football position, getting your hands inside, just getting your head across, all the things that you need to do as an offensive lineman technical-wise with the fundamentals and technique. He was the best in the league, and I was so blessed to have him. And when I came in, that was the first thing that I really started to work on, and he worked on with me, is just being a technical football player and a fundamental football player, which helped me for the next 11 years. When Howard left, Alex Gibbs came in, and I was so blessed to have Alex Gibbs, because Alex Gibbs is by far the best X's and O's coach. He is the best at explaining and teaching the game of football, teaching how to look at defenses, read defense, look at blitz patterns. And so I went from the best technical coach to really the best assignment coach that you can ever have. And then after that, I had Art Shell, who was a Hall of Fame football coach in his own right, and a Hall of Fame football player. And it was a little bit different because he was more of a player's coach, and he could kind of relate to us and kind of gave us a little bit of secrets, kind of the secrets of playing on the offensive line. And then after that, I went to Mike Solari. A lot of people think is probably the best all-round, well-formed offensive line coach who he's still coaching now. So I was really, really blessed. But my foundation started with the best possible coach it could with Howard Mudd. And, you know, Howard was a free spirit. Howard played in San Francisco. Howard was very, very open with all kinds of social issues. As you know, homosexuality before anybody was even talking about it. You know, his roommate when he was playing with the San Francisco 49ers was a homosexual. And, you know, he made sure that we understood that, you know, there was no messing around when it came to social issues. There was no messing around when it came to social slurs. He would get just really upset. And it really opened my mind because, I came from a conservative south side of Chicago family. My father was a policeman. My mom was a nurse. I didn't know many African Americans. I didn't know any homosexuals. I didn't know any things but just, you know, white city worker kids. And he really opened my mind up and really helped to form me as not only a football player, but as a human being. And then fast forward, we kept our relationship up. We were Facebook friends. And, you know, he passed away doing something that he loved. He would every summer take his motorcycle and he would ride across country. He would go to all these different places. And then every weekend he would go up into the mountains of Washington and Oregon and explore around. And he was always on his motorcycle with his wife, Shirley. And it's basically what happened is he was on somebody cut him off and he lost control. That's the thing about, you know, listen, I would never ride motorcycles. I'm afraid of motorcycles. I really am. But I love people that ride them. I love the free spirit of people who ride motorcycles. And I think we all have to be cognizant, especially this time of the year when there's a lot of motorcycle people driving around, that we got to be aware of where they're at and make sure that we're looking around and cognizant of those motorcyclists, because one wrong move by a driver in a motorcycle doesn't have, you know, thousands of pounds of steel around him. The only thing is between him is his helmet and the concrete, and it took his life. So Howard Mudd, I miss him. I love him. And he was one of my best friends. And I haven't seen him in years. But the one thing that's funny, because every time I look on ESPN, I see Jeff Saturday. And Jeff Saturday, was number 61. And when Howard went to Indianapolis and they drafted Jeff Saturday, I've seen him years later. He said, listen, all I heard about was Tim Grunhardt. And the reason why you're 61 is because of Tim Grunhardt. And you're the next Tim Grunhardt. And I took that as a great compliment because I thought Jeff was an awesome football player and a great person. So him and I have that relationship. I'd be number 61 and have Howard Mudd as our coach.
So you said he was grumpy.
Very grumpy.
You strike me as one of the guys. I remember on my high school sports teams, there was always one or two guys that could actually make the angry coach laugh. But only a couple guys knew they could get away with it. You know, the rest of the guys had to kind of shut up and do whatever the coach said. Were you one of those guys? Could you ever make him crack?
Yeah, we did. And you know, so let's think about this offensive line. And so, I mean, who would be the personality who would do that? You had Richard Baldinger.
Yeah,
Richard. I love Richard. He's smart and he does a great job on Metro Sports, but he's not the funniest guy in the world. All right, Dave Lutz. He's an old country boy. He's down basically hunting hog right now. He's not. And then it was me and it was Zotter. And Zotter and I kind of had the same personality. So Zotter was another guy that could really kind of get under Howard's skin a little bit and kind of get him going. And then it was John Ault. John Ault doesn't say six words. So, that was a very interesting offensive line group that he coached. And I wish I could say the line, but I can't say it, so I'll kind of summarize the line that he used to say about me all the time when he watched me do individual period drills. He'd say, Grunny, you do these drills like old people blank.
Wow.
And I would say, what does that mean? He goes, you know what that means.
Like,
you do these drills
here?
Like old people blank.
What's the age we're getting to here?
I don't know what old people are, but I know.
Right.
But
I'm an old person.
I couldn't relate until now exactly what he was saying.
Oh, that's what he meant.
Yeah, now all of a sudden you're like, oh, this is what Howard was talking about. Okay, this is it.
Does that mean that you don't do it at all, that it's not very pretty, that there's a lot of different ways to take that right now?
It's not very pretty. It's not very technically sound. But it gets the job done, I guess.
Right. Right. You need to work.
We've had some great quotes today on the show.
Yeah. Hey, Sarah Grunhardt's on line two for some reason. Hello. So for you mentioned his career. He played his college ball at Hillsdale College.
Right.
And then played for the 49ers and the Bears. He was a two-time All-Pro, three-time Pro Bowler, and made the NFL 1960s All-Decade Team.
Right.
He earned the Pro Football Writers of America Lifetime Achievement Award for his work as an assistant coach. And you mentioned his time with the Colts from 98 to 2009. During his 12 years in Indy, the Colts allowed the fewest sacks in the NFL with just 218 sacks in 182 games. And Peyton Manning credits much of his success to the protection he received from Howard Mudd's front line. And so you look at in all the different teams he coached for, the Chargers, the Niners, the Seahawks, the Browns, Chiefs, Colts, Eagles, 47 years involved really in the NFL. Unbelievable career.
So I got two great stories about Howard Mudd. The first one was when we first played the Cleveland Browns, after they got fired, the whole staff got fired. We played Cleveland here in Kansas City. And the owner, what's his name again? It starts with an M. Oh, the owner
Modell?
Of Brown, Modell. So Modell, he knew where Modell was up in the box, right? He knew where he was up in the box or in a suite. And at the end of the game, we were up so much that he said, Reinhardt, come here. So he said, I want you and I to look up at this guy and flip him off. And I said, okay, coach, whatever you want me to do. So we looked up, we found him. He was looking kind of, we thought he was looking at us, and we flipped him off. So I felt pretty cool. That was our first bonding experience.
We
flipped off Art Modell.
You know what? Everybody in Cleveland wants to give you a standing ovation right now.
Yeah, he's well deserved.
So fast forward to when Howard was in Seattle. And we were playing on TNT on a Thursday night. And he was on the other side. And it was a really tough game. In that game, Marcus Allen got in a scuffle on the sideline that I went and broke up. And it cost me $10,000 because I broke up the fight. But I actually threw a couple punches to get Marcus out.
Hey, you got to do what you got to do.
I did have a legal chop block on Cortez Kennedy, which cost me $5,000. So we're up to $15,000 just
that's
for this game.
That's a
game for you, Timmy.
It gets worse.
Okay. Oh, boy.
So we're going to the end zone. That's I guess it would be the.
By the way, was it a fair
the west
fine
end zone
on the Cortez Kennedy? Was it a legit chop block?
Oh yeah, it was.
Okay, you got your money's worth.
I got my money's worth.
Okay, good.
I didn't do it on purpose.
Just wanted to make sure,
but I did do it.
Yeah,
and I got called for it, and sometimes you would have a illegal chop block that you didn't get called for, and all of a sudden you looked on your stool the next Tuesday, and there was a $5,000 fine, and you're like, well, I didn't get a call for that. But they would give you the play, the time, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And most of the time, they were right.
Okay.
So we're going into the west end zone, and Howard is, like he always was on the very, very far part of where the players stand, and he was kind of watching the game, and we ran a screen. And I went out, and I chop blocked another guy, but this time it was a legal chop block because it was just me and him out there. Now I don't even think you can do it anymore, but I think it was one of the corners or safeties on the screen. I got him really good. And as I was going through my momentum of cutting him, I actually popped back on my feet, and there was right in front of me Howard Mudd. And he looked at me, and I looked at him, and I love the guy, but one of our things we'd always do together is we kind of flip each other off. So I decided... I thought I'm gonna pop up and flip them off. Well, guess what? TNT had the camera on me, and that cost me $15,000.
A bird cost you $15,000. Two punches only cost you $10,000.
$30,000 game, and I wasn't.
And what year was this?
This was I don't know. It might have been 94.
That's like $300,000 today.
And I did it out of jest, and we laughed about it and joked about it on the sideline. He went over and gave him a high five, but I flipped him off. Like, we used to do that all the time. And it was on TNT. It was on national TV, and I think the announcer, you could probably find it if you...
That was Sunday Night Football back in those days, right?
It was either Sunday Night or Thursday Night Football. And then, so the announcer goes, oh, I think Grunhardt is saying that he's number one. And so they talked about it. Well, fast forward to the next year, we're going through the rules meeting. And the commissioner is in the rules meeting with us, and this flashes up and said, please do not do this. And this was at every team, me flipping off somebody in the stands. So, yeah,
you
that was
got some money back for that one.
They used my personal licensing, my likeness. I loved Howard, and that was the kind of guy he was.
It's crazy if you think about all that. So you're throwing punches that cost you $10,000.
Yeah, well, it was so what happened is Marcus got thrown into the sideline and like slid underneath the bench, and like all these guys were on top of him, and it wasn't really punches. I was basically with my fist moving people away from Marcus.
I wasn't punching him, honey. Yeah. I was just moving people away with my fist.
Yeah.
But the point is, you were physically throwing punches, and then you chop block a guy. That could hurt a guy's knee or something. And all that combined was the same as showing someone a finger on your hand.
Yeah.
Just showing them your finger. Hey, there's a finger right there.
Needless to say, Sarah wasn't too happy with me, so I was not practicing any of my techniques with what we just talked about, with old people doing it. I was put on hiatus for about a month. So boy. Howard Mudd, not only was he social distancing way before it was cool. That's right. Not only did Howard say that my technique of football was like old people blanking, well, the old people blanking stopped after the Howard Mudd incident.
When I asked you to share some memories of Howard Mudd, I did not think it would go in this direction.
I could tell.
But I'm happy that it did.
I could tell so many great stories about Howard Mudd. And
you got one more? You got one more?
Let me think about it. You know what? Before the end of the show, I'll give you another Howard Mudd story. But those are the two really stick out, because one cost me $15,000 and one was flipping off the owner of a team. So I thought I think that's enough for you. Isn't it? Come on,
quality. That is quality.
Quality thing.
Well, it's like it leaves me wanting more. They're so good.
Right.
That's the problem.
Right.
Yeah, I will give you one more. So Bill Moss, and we were up in River Falls. Bill, one of the famous things, I'm not blaming Bill, but I was a young guy, so I was pretty impressionable, right? He would always say, hey, right after practice, meet me over to the car. We're going to Bozeman. We'll have a couple beers and some cheese curds, and then we'll go to dinner. And I said,
hey, Steven,
okay.
It's Renee at the Copper Kettle. We'll see you next week.
That's right. Yeah.
Hey, Steven, it's Renee at the Copper Kettle. We'll see you next week.
So we're in.
My old friend Renee. Thank you.
So we had a couple beers, a couple three, a couple four, a couple six, whatever it was, and in about 20 minutes, and had some cheese curds, and went back to the dinner, and we're kind of in line, and I'm kind of giggling and laughing, and Howard looks at me and goes, I remember when I had my first beer, kid. And he kind of just like made fun of me, like, you lightweight, so, and I was like, oh, I didn't have a beer. He goes, yeah, sure you didn't. Yeah, sure. I remember my first beer. So I always say that to guys now whenever somebody, comes up and they're kind of buzzed or something. They're younger. I'm like, yeah, I remember when I had my first beer, kid. So that was the way Howard was. He was a great guy, great coach, had a lot of fun. He was as tough as nails on the football field, as tough as nails in the meeting room. I'm talking to a point where he would just murder you with technique and making sure you're doing the right thing. But once you were out and about, he was the guy that put his arm around you, the first guy to make you laugh, the first guy to give you hope when you were hopeless. And there's a lot of times as a rookie in the first couple of years in the NFL that you're hopeless. Another story is that, I never forget, I went and bought a house in Lee Summit, like in October, November of my rookie year, and I was bragging in the offensive line room, yeah, I just bought a house. And he goes, why? If I were you, I wouldn't have bought a house. So I was like, well, why not? He goes, because you're not going to be here that long. So
that's I was a hell like, of a motivator.
I was like, wah, wah, wah. It was like, the Saturday Night Live with the Debbie Downer. If he's like, right. And she goes, yeah, that was me. That was how I felt in the meeting. But that's the way Howard was. God bless him.
So rest in peace, Howard Mudd. We'll be right back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Tim Grunhard is with us until 10 o'clock. All right, Timmy, the talk of the town is college football. And, of course, you have a son at Notre Dame, and so you have insight into everything that's happening, considering Notre Dame has hooked up with the ACC, and so football is still a go for the Fighting Irish. No Big Ten, no Pac-12 in the fall, but at least right now it's still Big 12, ACC, and SEC full steam ahead. What are your thoughts on what's happened over the past couple of days?
Well, just like anything else when it comes to the COVID virus, I just feel horrible that we have to make these decisions and that this has kind of happened. So let's start with that. That it just breaks my heart that there's just so much disruption because of this COVID virus. And, you know, we have to take precautions. We have to do the right thing to make sure that this pandemic is brought back under control. So I pray that we do that. And I know that everybody's trying out there wearing masks and washing their hands and trying to social distance and do all those kind of things. But, you know, these things are going to happen. It's just part of it. And it's part of this virus that is very, very contagious. So with that in mind, I feel for the Big 12, I mean, excuse me, the Pac-12 and the Big 10, that they had to make these decisions. It's funny, just like really anything else or anyone else, there's a lot of different opinions. In the Pac-12, their doctors and medical people have said that this is something they can't do, and it's not safe, and it's not going to be healthy for their players and their athletes to participate in sports. And the same thing in the Big Ten, that their doctors and their medical people have said that it's not safe or healthy for their athletes to participate. You know, now that you know, you're coming out with some new information about lung and heart problems, that really does add to the concern. So let's start with that then too. So, but just like anything else in this virus that we've talked about now since February, basically, there's just a lot of different opinions because it's so new to us. And, you know, even though it feels like it's been here forever, it's only been here for, you know, what, 4 or 5 months. And so it's fairly new to us, this virus and what's happening is fairly new. And then there's people like the doctors at Duke, and there's some ACC doctors that said, listen, the protocols that you guys have put in place are going to give you an opportunity to, you know, get the sucker done if you can. And, you know, try to continue to do your best to keep people safe and to test and do all those kind of things. And if you do that, then maybe we can get this season going. I think the SEC and the Big 12 have said the same thing. So there's a lot of different opinions. And I think that that's just the way it is in this country with the coronavirus. I think we all know that we're all concerned and we know how dangerous it could be, but there are different opinions. So, you know, the SEC, the ACC, and the Big 12 are going to give it a shot. I like that they're going to give it a shot. As a father, and as a an alumnus, and as an ex-coach, and as an ex-player, I like the idea of giving it a shot. But I also want to make sure that the health people are watching this very, very closely to make sure that the athletes are going to be healthy. And if there's an outbreak or there's any signs or any symptoms of any kind of spike, then they've got to shut it down. It's as simple as that. But I like the idea of giving it a shot, and I'll tell you why. First off, when you ask somebody to do something, right, you ask somebody, listen, Colin, my son, you need to come here in May. All right, you need to social distance. You need to stay here in this quarantined hotel bubble, and you need to stay out of the bars and out of the restaurants and out of the different places, and give yourself an opportunity to have a football season. Give yourself opportunity to be safe. Give your teammates an opportunity to be safe. So let's give that a shot, and let's do that. When you do that, and they have, then they should be rewarded with a chance. And I think that that's the good thing the ACC, the Big 12, and the SEC have done is they're giving it a shot because the players, if you look at the testing, you look at K-State, they started out with 19 or 20 guys that were positive with the coronavirus. And the last test I had, I think they had zero. I think Notre Dame had 2 in their last test. And I think the most they've ever had in one testing is 2. So the last time before that, they had 0. I think this time they had 2. And remember that they started school. All of their students are on campus now. So 20,000 people have rolled into school, into South Bend and into campus. So there's going to be some cases. That's going to happen. So I like the idea of giving it a shot. And I think it's a reward for these kids. So if you ask them to do something and they do it, and these guys basically have done it. If you look around, there's been a lot of spikes in right when these schools started. And through the social distancing and listening to their coaches, listening to their medical people, listening to their trainers and their doctors, that they have been able to stem this a little bit, they give it a shot. Now, I still think it's a less than 50% chance that a football season is played in the fall. Because when all these kids start rolling into campus and these kids start going to class, there's going to be a spread. And once one guy gets it, remember this now, this happened in Notre Dame. And, you know, because of HIPAA rules, you can't really talk about who they are. But this happened in Notre Dame. So there's eight guys that are out because one guy tested positive. So when one guy tests positive and he's maybe a roommate or a friend and they've been, you know, around each other, now all of a sudden eight guys are out. So, or six guys are out. So they, and all those guys had, the only one person has tested positive, but because of the rules and because of what the CDC and the WHO have said is, you know, once you, if you're exposed to somebody who has it, you've got to sit out for 7 to 14 days and you got to be tested and all that kind of stuff. So that's what's going to happen. And all of a sudden, let's say your running back or your quarterback is going to class and he catches it and, you know, in that room, you know, that he's meeting in or whatever, all of a sudden four or five or six guys get it. And even if they're not positive, they have to sit out. So there's going to be quite a number of people that do it. So I'm hoping for the best. I'm preparing for the worst.
So I want to get all of your guys' thoughts on this. This is something that was put out by Albert Breer of Sports Illustrated just a couple of minutes ago. Because I am for... one thing that I take optimism in is the creativity of mankind, that we come up with solutions to things, and especially when we have an economic incentive to, we come up with different solutions and creative plans. So what do you guys think of this one? He says, imagine this. The Big Ten launches a season January 1st, playing on Thursday and Friday nights during the first two rounds of the NFL playoffs and on Saturdays otherwise. They do it in some combination of these domes in their area: Syracuse, Detroit, Indianapolis, Minneapolis, St. Louis. The Pac-12 has a more temperate climate, so they can maybe do the same thing, but play in some of the big outdoor stadiums. He says that he's told that these are ideas that have been floated out by coaches in the Big Ten, and the NFL has already been willing to help as much as possible, being willing to move back the NFL combine and draft by a month. So you could look into possibly something where these, and maybe if the SEC, ACC, Big 12 have to postpone their seasons down the road, they could join in as well. And I want especially your opinion, Grunny, because you've played spring ball, you've played regular season college football. What do you think of the idea of trying to do something like this starting maybe in early January in conjunction with the NFL?
Well, I'm hoping that there'll be a difference in January.
We don't know that, yeah, right? We have no idea right. When this is going to get better.
Right. And so, you know, that's what, I mean, I love the idea that people are making plans because I think that's really important. And I think it's really important mentally for the athletes. And I think it's important mentally for the students. And I think it's important mentally for our country that people are making plans and they're trying to figure out ways that they can, you know, bring sports back, which is really important to our country, thank God, because we wouldn't have a job if it wasn't. And it's really important to these student athletes. I do worry about these kids, with the COVID virus and their health, but I also worry a lot about their mental state.
Sure.
And there's a lot of kids out there, and I've coached at the highest level. I coached in NFL Europe, and I coached in Division I football. And
coached in high school.
And I coached in high school. And there's a lot of kids. I mean, this is what kind of keeps going. This is the straw that stirs their juices of life. And all of a sudden you take that straw out and nothing's stirring and it's kind of stagnant. It's not a good thing for a lot of these kids. So, yeah, you got to weigh, well, you got the COVID virus and they can get sick. But then again, you're taking away what these kids love and what they've worked so hard for and they've dedicated their lives to. So it's a really, really tough decision. But to you, I think if God willing, something we get a big time drop in cases, or we come up with a remedy, or we come up with
a vaccine.
Thanks for the word. I don't know why I can't think of that word ever. That vaccine. then all power to him. I love the idea that it's already been talked about. I love the idea that the NFL is open to helping this to happen because, well, and here's a dirty little secret for everybody out there. The NFL is not changing crap, okay? So they're not moving their draft. It's not happening, okay?
This says they might move it back a month.
I doubt it. Because here's the thing. If Las Vegas already has lost it last year, now all of a sudden they have it all set and they got all the rooms and they got all the stuff and it takes a lot of logistics to get this thing done. And all of a sudden they're going to move their draft. That's a monumental movement. But they could do it. But I just don't see them doing it. And I don't see them messing with the combine. The NFL is going to do their thing. So I don't know. It's just a lot to digest. But I am glad that the NFL and college football and the powers that be are making a plan and figuring something out because we need that, and we need that hope, and so do these kids.
We have Tim Grenhard in studio. We will be right back after this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you very much for joining us.
I'm going to take Jake, and we're going to go on that Beat Shazam show, whatever it is. Have you seen that?
I can beat Shazam.
Is that what it's called? Beat Shazam?
Yeah.
Shazam
is an app.
I know, but the show now, this Jamie Foxx.
So it's like name that tune before Shazam can, right?
Right. And his daughter, who, by the way, is very, very talented. Nice to look at.
Talented.
This is
very
Run the
talented.
Jewels right here, by the way.
It is.
Boom. You know every song because, I mean, think about how many songs a year you listen to. And
I got a catalog. It's something I'm always looking for new music to play on the show here. So it's something I love music, and it's an aspect of the show that I get to incorporate that into. And so I am looking. I listen to a lot of music that's, you know, I sift through music.
You know what? You guys, so Steven, you guys have done a really nice job of putting together just a quality group of people to do a radio show together.
Eh.
You're included in the end.
Meh.
Hey, so the Kansas City Chiefs are starting camp on Friday. What do you think about that?
Yeah.
Let's talk about this week's stupid article. this is from NFL.com.
Is this a
Adam
new
Shine. What's that?
This is going to be a new segment. Stupid article of the week.
Right, here it is.
Yeah.
Adam Shine ranked the top 9 offenses in 2020. And my opinion, if you don't pick the Chiefs, you're stupid. But so if you weren't going to pick the Chiefs, who would you had to pick your prediction for the 2020 season's best offenses, but I told you you couldn't pick the Chiefs, who would you pick?
Everybody wants to talk about the Saints, you know, the Ravens, all that. I think the Ravens are more of a defensive team with a quarterback.
I'm just so sick of this.
I know. It's just,
particular team right here getting hyped.
I really, Tampa?
The Dallas Cowboys.
Oh, the Dallas.
The Dallas Cowboys.
Oh, gosh.
There it is.
I know.
He has the Dallas Cowboys.
They're number one.
They are the Texas Longhorns of the NFL.
I mean.
They are. You're right. That's a great example.
Thank you.
They are. No, I mean, I'm really, really.
They have talent.
But they're a legit top 5 offense, though. I mean, they are. They are.
Are they better than the Chiefs? Would you have their offense than the Chiefs?
No, I would not. So that's why I said they're a legit top 5.
It's just because here's what the deal is. It's just so dumb because everyone does these mental gymnastics to try to figure out a way to pick somebody else other than the Chiefs. But the Chiefs are the defending Super Bowl champions. No offense has been more consistent than the Chiefs since Patrick Mahomes took over at quarterback. People talk about Patrick Mahomes in terms of not being the best quarterback in the league right now, but more, is he the best quarterback of this generation? Could he be the best quarterback we've ever seen? And you have one of the greatest offensive minds in NFL history in Andy Reid. They just drafted a running back in the first round. They have a terrific set of bookends in Mitch Schwartz and Eric Fisher. I know that they've got some issues at the interior offensive line, but that's not going to hold them back. Andy Reid has shown that that's not going to hold them back. You've got Tyreek Hill, one of the best receivers in football. We've talked about McCole Hardman and Sammy Watkins. who's going to emerge as the number two guy as far as the receivers? Who's going to have a better season this year? Who's going to have more targets? Who's going to have more production? And one of those guys is going to be your third receiver. There's teams that would die to have one of those guys as their second receiver. And then, oh, by the way, the only tight end in NFL history to have four straight 1,000-yard seasons is Travis Kelce. Oh, no, yeah, he plays for the Chiefs, too. Screw you, Adam Schein. I'm done.
All right. Can't argue with that.
So interesting.
How you can make an argument for somebody else?
The Cowboys led the NFL in total yards last year, but they were sixth in the NFL in points per game. I don't know which one you think is more important.
I'm certainly not making an argument that anybody in this league is better than the Kansas City Chiefs, but that's boring to say that. And that's not going to get clicks. Everybody already knows that. That is a known.
But it's accurate.
Yeah, you're right. But so, I mean, this guy's trying to get people to click on his article, so he wants something different. And look, the Dallas Cowboys, they are a legit top five offense. And if you're going to say somebody other than the Chiefs, I can listen to that argument. I'm not so sure I would go with them.
Who are the top five in the article?
I mean,
San Francisco's got to be in there. Yeah.
Number one's Dallas. Number two's the Chiefs. Number three, the Ravens.
Yep.
Number four, the Bucks.
Yep.
Number five, the Falcons.
Falcons?
They don't even have the Saints. They don't even have the Saints in the top five.
They don't have Saints or the Niners. Yeah,
That's brutal.
How about this? Number five, I said, is the Falcons. Number six, the Saints. Number seven, the Raiders. Number eight, the Bengals. And number nine, the Lions.
Why the Bengals?
What's going to be in 2020?
Well, they got Joe Burrow now.
Joe Mixon is, I don't know, they got AJ Green coming back. No. I'm trying to talk.
I'll talk yourself into it.
No, I won't.
Do it.
No.
Not the Bengals. Not the Bengals.
Nah. Yep.
The Bengals are not a top 10 offense.
No. Yep. Now, what about the Indianapolis? At least I would listen.
Well, yeah, they probably have the best offensive line in the league.
They do.
Offense would you rather have than the Chiefs?
None.
Yeah, I mean that's just an obvious statement. Yeah.
You figure it out. That's how you ask yourself, what offense would I rather have than the Chiefs? If people, that's just all about Mahomes. Oh, I was going to cuss you. Oh boy, I held up. No blank, Sherlock. It's because that's the most important position in football.
Absolutely right. And then the second most important positions are the offensive line,
center.
But if you look, this is the offensive line for the Chiefs. Go Fisher right now, Reimers, Austin Ryder, Willie, and Schwartz. And what's the guy's name?
Osemele.
Osemele is rotating in with Reimers, and the reason why Reimers is over Osemele right now is because Reimers was around during the whole virtual Zoom meetings and all that, so he's ahead of him in the offense. But they got a veteran guy. Both of those guys are veteran guys who have been around and played some good football. Now, listen, they're a little long in the tooth, and that's not a great thing to be when you are an offensive lineman. Believe me, I've been there. It's not the easiest thing to do when you get old and you're playing offensive line. But they're very experienced, and they can get the job done. I like that little combination of both of those guys, and I would not be surprised to see both of those guys play at the same time, one at right and one at left. Schwartz is, I think, the best right tackle in the league. I think that Fisher is in the top 10, maybe top 5 offensive left tackles in the league. And, Austin Ryder is a good, solid, smart center. So, we're okay. They're hanging in there. And we have a running back that, by the way, makes people just look silly in space. Silly. And you're going to see silliness in space when people try to tackle him. It's you're going to love it. And by the way, they have him returning punts right now, too, which like.
Whoa.
I like it.
Here is some official news that has been rumored about the past couple of days. The 49ers and George Kittle agreed to a 5-year, $75 million contract extension.
He deserves it. He's a hell of a tight end. He makes that offense go.
He's almost as good as Kelce.
The second best tight end in the league.
Wow. Yep.
Wow.
He deserves it.
5-year, $75 million. No, he's fantastic.
He's not. Yeah, he is. I'd rather have Travis, but I am very biased because I love Travis Kelce.
That's
so
right.
There you go.
I'd rather have you right now.
Yeah.
On the show.
You got me, buddy.
Thank you, Timmy.
No matter who you flip off.
All right, hey, just make sure you guys out there remember, don't perform like old people blank.
Yeah, that's right.
Right. Or you, if you're old. That's fine. Whatever. Yep. thank you to Tim Grenhart. Thanks to all of our guests for appearing on the Border Patrol today on Sports Radio 810 WHB.